June the 22nd, and this is not our last meeting.
Yes.
We think that we're likely to have meetings of the subcommittee both Wednesday and Thursday. So you might sort of plan on that. Madam Co-Chair and I went over the budget this morning, and it looks like we will need that much time to finish with the education budgets, and that will do it for our work. We have this morning a public work session on House Bill 2871, and Representative Nierman is here to talk to us about that. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Rowe and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Nierman. I'm the representative from House District 23. And this bill does is it allocates a little bit of money for open source textbooks. So they kind of have a little bit of a program doing that now at Oregon State University. So this is just to give it a little bit more of a kickstart. And we're always I'm on the higher ed committee, and one of the things that we got a lot of testimony about this year was the cost of education. And it was kind of an eye opener to me to see how much textbooks contributed to that that cost, and especially in community colleges. Not that the textbooks are any more expensive for community colleges, but the proportion of that of the cost of education that makes up. So this is a great opportunity for us to give a jump start to the open source textbook project and cut costs. And I think it has some other effects too. It makes collaboration with other teachers easier. It makes it easier for the textbooks to respond to changes in the industry or whatever. So I think this is a real good thing, and I'm very much supportive of it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for coming in this morning. Are there questions for Representative Nierman? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Nierman, the jump start part you talk about, where exactly would the money be allocated?
So as I understand it, any university could get a grant from that. Right now, Oregon State kind of they have their neck out in front of everybody else.
Yes.
On that, but I think it could go to any university. It could go to any project at any university.
Follow up, Mr.
Go ahead.
So would the money be going to subsidize faculty? One of my concerns is that every year we're seeing a phenomenal amount of progress in open source material, and I want to make sure that we're not I want to make sure we're being fiscally responsible and not supplanting by putting money in that faculty and educational institutions are already supporting and beginning to really gear up and move aggressively down a path.
So it's my understanding that that this money would go for kind of the infrastructure to support that. So it has to have like a website and things like that. And I'm not sure about like if it goes to a faculty member. And I just don't remember, but I don't think that it does to pay a faculty member to write a textbook. I don't think that's the use of the money there.
Okay. Additional questions? Again, Mike, thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
And we are in work session. So, Kristen, you want to add anything?
Sure. I will add, we already have a summary of the bill, but Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do have several amendments posted online. The -A7 is the LFO recommended amendment, and that appropriates $700,000 general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and that is to support two positions and 1.36 FTE to help set up the website and work with the universities. And then the remainder of the amount would be used for grant funds, which is roughly, we're estimating, probably going to be just under $400,000 for the grants. And then the A7 also contains the language from the A3 amendment, which expands the definition of open educational resource to include materials that conform to the Americans with Disability Act. And then it also includes the language from the A6 Amendment, which reduces the required open educational resource instruction materials to at least 15 courses rather than the original 30. And that original 30 was in there because originally the bill had a $1.1 million appropriation. So we're reducing it to $700,000 and therefore 15 courses. The only thing the LFO recommended amendment does not have is the A4 Amendment. I don't know, Senator Roblin, if you wanted to talk about that at all.
Yeah, I can just, I think they are embedded, and I know this one has not been approved yet, but my goal is to make sure that we have the most and best materials available. And this one basically says if, and we think it is embedded, but if you are working with a publisher, you're a professor, and they have online resources, and they want to, that they could still be eligible for the grant if they're going to produce this material that's going to go online to help all of the different groups that are doing it. And reading it, it's not specifically noted, it's not specifically excluded. I just wanted to make sure that it was on the record that people who are working on this kind of stuff, I think open source is going to open up, and you're going to get publisher people who have stuff that is not in the public domain, who are willing to put parts of it on the public domain in working with professors. And there's some other people here who could explain it even better if you want. Rocky has been back. So. If you want to hear from that, that would be fine. But that was the intent. I just want to get as much good material as we can on there. We've got groups that are out there, as we talked about the last time, that are putting stuff online. And but there's so much stuff that making sure that it's the right and how we can use it well. I understand why we need to have the positions at HEC, because it is open. It is wide open. And we've got Oregon State's working hard at trying to make it more usable for people. I support those efforts. We'll see. I don't know that it's going to be the silver bullet that everybody thinks it might be, but we've got to keep trying to figure out ways in which we cut down costs and help kids be more successful. So that was the whole idea. And if we want to hear from Mr. Dolan, we can, because he's the one I was working with.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. Maybe if Senator Roblin or maybe staff, someone can explain. I just wanted to hear a little bit more about about the grant aspect of it and how that works and where that money is going. I'm sorry, I tried to find it here and I don't see how that's working. Maybe you can point me in the right direction.
We can have HEC come up and talk about it. It's not specifically outlined in the bill.
Yeah, I couldn't find it in here about where the $400,000 was.
Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. Co-Chairs Monroe and comp members of the committee. For the record, Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. So we are envisioning, with the funds that are proposed to be allocated, hiring an open resources specialist, which is called for in the bill. The grants are designed to convene faculty across institutions. So one of the real, I think, challenges to having more open education resources available for students is for faculty to choose to use it. And they won't choose to use it if they haven't been part of identifying the content, really evaluating its rigor and quality. So the dollars would be for colleges and universities to propose, we want to come together around a math textbook. And we would take those requests in and then, identify at least 15 where folks could come together and identify the resources that could be used statewide.
Follow up. Thank you, Coach. I must be missing something. I'm just trying to understand when the check is written, who is actually going to receive the money? Professors, universities? Who's going to actually?
We would assume that the proposal would designate maybe a lead institution that would say, we're going to pull together the faculty from these, 8 institutions, colleges, and universities to vet.
They'll receive a stipend or they'll.
Yeah, they would use the dollars for folks to have the time to come and meet together.
So faculty would receive a stipend to work on this?
Through an institution, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Additional questions? Madam Co-Chair?
I don't know if I was dozing off or what, but can I ask a question to Senator Roblin? What happened to the Dash 4s
again? Senator Roblin, will you?
Dash 4, yeah, thank you. The US-4s were not, they came very late, so I assume that
right.
They didn't really get a look at it. What they're saying is, in those groups, when they're approving for money, and I'll check as I watch, there are professors who have arrangements with publishers with respect to the books that they're writing, right? So they're doing that already. And if, in fact, you can work on an arrangement where those relationships are kept and some stuff that is not currently open source could eventually become open source because this group gets together and makes it work, we want those relationships to also be honored as people who could receive grants if they can come up with a text that is going to go onto open source or materials that will go onto open source, where they already have an agreement with a publisher that their publisher is going to get it all. So there are these intricate relationships between professors, publishers, all of these other kinds of things that have been in place for a while. And as we start developing this, I want us to seek this as an opportunity to enter into some of those agreements where you have already an agreement with, I'll just say math, because I know math decks are very expensive, having bought a number of them, where they may have a section or they may have some stuff that everybody has agreed in this other group that they want to use, but it's under contract with this other thing. So how do we help get some of that into the open source programs that can make it maybe more likely that people will use that across the state? I think that's kind of where I'm at, what I'm asking for. But I don't want it to be excluded. So I'm a math professor at whatever school, and I've got this arrangement with a publisher, and I'm working. And I get together with my colleagues, and they say, wow, that's really a great explanation. I really like that portion or that chapter or whatever. And he says, well, I have an agreement with my publisher. I can't do that. But possibly if we work with them and everybody else in this whole arrangement, we can release that portion to the public sources. I think I'm getting it where it's going. And so I just don't want to have those excluded so they can't even be talked about, because you can put professors and other people in really strange positions if they've already got a written agreement with somebody, and then they come together in these partnerships and they realize, oh, I don't know that I can do this or not. I want all of that to be a part of the conversation. That's kind of where it comes from.
Okay, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. Is there any incentive for a publisher to do that?
Currently, probably not, though it may be that there is, because if this stuff gets being used a lot, they'll know that it's also in another textbook, and some other university may want to use that textbook because they found really, boy, that's a pretty neat particular pair of things. And I think that's part of where this conversation needs to happen at some point, because if we really want to expand the open source, and there's a lot of stuff out there, I think some of these people are going to have to figure out, how do I get some kind of interest in this to make it open source. That's a problem, I think, for all the purists in the open source era, because they don't want that mix. They want it to be open, and it's produced to be open, it's open. I think that's going to be hard over time. Many of our press professors and others supplement their income by relationships with publishers and others, and all of a sudden they don't have that. I think if we're really going to have a conversation, let's have a real conversation about how to get this material out as much as we can and develop new relationships. So that's part of where I'm at. I like open source. I think it's great, but sometimes the material produced is good for a particular thing, but it's not very usable across the board, and that's what Oregon State's been looking at for a long time, and I appreciate that, because that, I think there is this sense, and there's a whole lot of people who do open source stuff that really want to do it because they want to expand knowledge. It has nothing to do with their own gain. That has worked for a lot of it. So.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know textbooks are very expensive. Helped get a bunch of kids through college, and I get it. And I want to do what we can. I'm probably leaning toward a no vote for the wrong reasons. Some of them are what you brought up. I've always been frustrated with what I consider accepted within the system, but it's a major conflict of interest as far as I'm concerned. Some professors write their own books and mandate that that book has to be purchased and used, and I think that's crap.
Right.
And I think there are probably laws against that aren't being enforced. I mean, it's just, it frustrates me. And I don't want to blow this thing up, but I'm not sure I want to. I agree with the organizational part of it, and we need to come together. But universities and professors are supposed to, they spend time picking textbook material, curriculum material anyway. I'm not sure why we need to incent good behavior necessarily when that's part of their job anyway. Every professor out there is really getting pissed off with Huffman right now. But
Senator Roblin.
So we have, I think, some in going in line. We have some conflicting values in this particular situation. So you've got people who really want to make a really great textbook, and they want to have it available so that they can show kids and students and work with them. And there are some universities that have a requirement that you can write books, but we will never use them. So they got into that stuff a long time ago, and they said, we want you to make them. We think that's really great. But once you've got it, if it's not good enough to stand in other places, we aren't doing it. And after it's been out for a while, then we might consider it. But to begin with, when it goes, that's just some places. Individuals have different rules on this. There are other places where exactly what you said takes place. You know, they write the book, they get it all worked out, and they put it down as the book that we're going to use in the course. And I have always felt similarly that that's a tough one. But at the same time, I look at what our professors in Oregon get in relationship to a whole lot of others, and if they aren't supplementing their income, they're not keeping up, and they probably aren't going to stay here. They're going to go someplace else. So I have this mixed feeling about how to get the best people to teach in our schools, and sometimes the way to do that is to make sure that they have opportunities, whether it's speaking opportunities or other things, to supplement their income. I have my family members who are well into the academic stuff and getting their doctorates, and they had professors who would have been exceptional. They are exceptional professors who wanted to move to Oregon, but looked at the salary schedule and went off to BC, Austin, I mean, other places. So, I mean, I understand the real concerns that we have in our state if we want to continue to have outstanding programs. And so I want to do things in the way that makes it work. With the academic freedom part, every teacher has the right to pick their own materials. So if we don't do the things that we're tasking this bill about getting them together and talking, how are you going to actually use the open source stuff appropriately? Because there's not enough time. So I'm in favor of the bill. I want to make sure that we continue to explore opportunities to do this. And I think Oregon State's taken a lead on it, done a really great job. And I want that coordinating position so that we can take the academic freedom part, which every teacher has in our universities, and have them come together and say, okay, this is where we can go. And it's not going to happen on its own, I don't think. So I really appreciate Heck taking this on. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. Representative Huffman.
Thank you. One final comment. Just so people understand that, you know, if you don't sit behind this dais or you're not a co-chair, sometimes you don't know some of the choices we have to make. And there are a lot of good options for us every session that come along. But as one of the co-chairs explained to me over the weekend when I approached him about, are we going to get funding for this or that? He says, you know what? Everybody bitches and moans about not getting enough money for K-12, the state school fund, but yet you guys come in with all these brand new programs for $700,000 here and $3 million there, and you've got to understand that you got to pick and choose. Those come out of somewhere, and you could say they come out of the state school fund, directly or indirectly. Maybe it comes out of outdoor school. It could. I mean,
I agree.
When we're picking and choosing, I don't know. Am I going to have a minute to think about my vote here as you continue?
Yeah, while we're waiting for Representative Smith Warner, if you vote one way or the other, we might have to. Senator Roblin.
I thought I'd take a little time so he could think seriously.
You're officially over my pay grade, I'm pretty sure. Hey, no.
I absolutely agree, and it's really difficult when I have other priorities out there that I would rather have than another priority. And I know that the co-chairs agonize over every one of these, and they get all this information that's coming in, and they hear from one person that this is really important, another person that this is really important. At the end of the day, somebody has to make the decision, and we come here because some people have made that decision, and they say, this one, because of who it was, why it was, why we think it's important. Anyway, it raises up, and it's hard. I mean, I have a lot of things in there that I would like to have funded that are not going to get funded at the end of the day, but we do have to make choices, and they have to make choices, and I don't envy anybody that has to be the person that's on that final one. So I just want to make sure that we make sure that as we pass this bill, we give it the the greatest opportunity to produce the most good. And I think that whenever you're doing grants, for me, I want them to have as much at HEC, as much latitude with respect to how to organize this and how to pick from one or the other, because that's not very much money, to get the most good out of it. And that's my big thing, is give them, and I trust them, the best, biggest latitude on how to go about making these grants to find out which one works best. $400,000 is not very much money. But the $700,000 for the people is really important. I mean, if we're really going to get into this and do anything with open source, you've got to have somebody that's kind of in charge and working about it, especially if you want to go across our universities. Because they are, as we know now, more independent contractors, those universities are. And without someone helping them work together, i.e. HEC's purpose, and I think this is one good place for them to work together and to develop those bonds that not existed. I've been very pleased with Oregon State, Portland State, finding places where they will work together. I think they're working together in some places more than they have ever have before, and I appreciate that, and I want to keep that open and going. So.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. So maybe Senator Roblin can answer. In the policy committee, was information brought forward that this approach works in other states? I'm kind of trying to understand why the free market, why the private market isn't kind of taking care of this with the faculty. I understand there's obviously bad actors in the textbook industry, which is why we're here today. People who are charging $500 for a student book is obviously outrageous. And what I really like about having the open source is I like the idea of, you know, you just need to replace one chapter here and there to update something or to make it more user-friendly, like in the case of math. And, you know, that kind of thing I'm very supportive of, and I do think that faculty should be compensated for the work that they do. It's hard, with this particular subject, it's hard to see where the future will be. And that makes me, I don't know why I feel so nervous, but it feels a little bit like we're going down a path that where will the incentive be to create high quality textbooks, and it's because we have some bad actors, and I wish there was a way to combat that part of it. But I was just wondering, is this approach being done at other state school systems to use the grants to, I don't know, I was just curious, and then I'll be quiet. But
House Bill
Roblin.
It's a House bill, so I didn't get to see it in my committee.
Ah.
So I couldn't tell you the answer to that. Uh-huh. I talked to people from higher ed, from the other committee in the House, about some of the stuff, and I think they had a lot of good discussions about that. The part that's tough, and I will tell you, as a publisher, you publish a new math textbook or whatever, and two universities take it up and they order 1,000 books. And now you've put a whole lot of time in it, you've printed it, you've done a lot of other things. You want to regroup at least the money you put into it. Makes textbooks very expensive. Now, if you're selling a bestseller and you're going to sell a million of them, you don't have to make much off each book. This is an interesting publishing venture. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think it makes it harder, and it's why books are more expensive. There's not a whole lot of people who decide that this new math textbook that's this big is something I want to have on my coffee table. there's only a few of us that would think that would be important. And so we pay a premium for thinking that's a really fun thing to do.
If there's pictures on the coast.
A particular page where they've got these big formulas out there, you know, so you can impress all the neighbors. If we can figure out how to open that market up for more of those people to understand that would be really an important thing, the textbooks would be cheaper. It's just, this is a hard one, and I don't know, but I do believe that open source provides an opportunity for really neat things to happen at some point.
Yeah.
I also understand why having proprietary information is important for people. You know, I fight for all the artists that are out there, because I have a couple kids that chose to be artists, who don't want their stuff given away all the time because everybody thinks it's really great. I think they deserve to get something for their ideas and their attitudes and their whatevers. And so for me, that's all of this that gets rolled together. But if we don't look at it seriously and do something, I think that's also a problem. So,
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will you work with me and the co-chairs to get the Dash 4 in?
I'm fine with it as long as people understand, as long as I get nods from people that they're going to look at that, I'm fine with that. I'm okay to have that conversation with them, and I would be glad to have that conversation with the co-chairs if we want to do that. I'm also okay to vote today without them and to move forward with an understanding that that's what I hope the original intent included, because I think the language is wide enough to allow it. I just want to make sure. But I'm willing to do whatever you guys want to do on that one.
And, you know, it can be put in the end of session bill.
That's true. I'm willing to do that with you for sure.
You know, we're given authority to move this bill today with the dash 7 without the dash 4. But that isn't, that's just because the dash 4 came along so late. It can still be added to the end of session bill.
And I'm willing to work with you on that for sure.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin was persuasive. I do see the need. I have something back here nagging at me that we're taking $700,000 and throwing it at the wall, hoping something sticks and some good comes out of it. And we've got other programs that I know are proven to do good that we're not going to fund because of this. I will support it because I do support open source, and I know we need to head down this path. But I've gotten a lot of concerns on the record that I wanted to, and I'm going to be a soft yes.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You may have just answered my question, but I want to confirm. Your intention today is to move this bill.
Yes, with the dash 7.
The dash A7s only.
And to go to the big co-chairs and say that there's considerable support on this subcommittee for the dash 4, and we'd like you to include it in the end of session bill.
Follow up?
Yes,
if
go
I
ahead.
May. So that answer actually helped me a lot. I probably have many of the same concerns over this issue, and frankly, we're looking also on our agenda today at outdoor school, and I know you kind of threw that out there, Representative Huffman, and I've worked a lot on that bill, and it gets nothing. And that's a program in place. That's not hiring FTE. That's money going directly to kids immediately, would be. And with the concerns that there's other things that are not receiving the funding, because this is, I do appreciate it's now 700,000, not 11 or 1.1 million. Just to further substantiate that concern of the committee, I'm going to be a no. So that this certainly hopefully that will raise some red flags that this is a tough issue. If there's a way we can get there, I think we all want to get to a point of decreasing the costs of materials, whether that's a printed book or online. I just don't know that this gets us there. I'm not convinced yet. So thank you for that answer, and I'll certainly support the amendment, but not the bill.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, on the Dash 7 amendment, please.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move the Dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2871.
Discussion? Any objections?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2871 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Further discussion? Objections to the motion? Representative Springer, any other objection? Senator Thompson objects. Motion carried. Senator Roblin, you want to carry this?
I'd be glad to.
Okay.
It's a House bill.
It's a House bill.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Co-Chair, are you okay with Senator Roblin handling it?
Handling it in the full and the Senate.
In the full and the Senate, yes.
Okay.
And to the House?
I'll take it to the House.
And okay, Madam Co-Chair will carry it to the House. Thank you very much. And
Doug's up now.
Yeah, do you want to trade me back or?
Yeah,
switch back to my machine. Okay, I will then we'll close on 2871 and open a work session on House Bill 3380.
Mr. Chair, Wilson. Members of the subcommittee, this is House Bill 3380. It deals with a brand new initiative that came forward in the governor's recommended budget and is currently slated to receive funding in the budget. Hopefully you'll see tomorrow in the Department of Education. It directs the Early Learning Division of the Department of Education to administer a program that expands preschool beyond its sort of set delivery system now. Eligible organizations would be not only sort of established preschools, but also include Head Start providers, Oregon pre-K providers, child care providers, relief nurseries, private preschools, public charter schools. So it expands the concept of preschool in terms of the provider network. The program would be such that the early learning hubs would be the coordination mechanism for the for their service areas, and that they would apply for funds for providers in their area, and these providers would have to be having new program or expanding their program, would have to be a program that is at least comparable in the number of instructional hours to full-time kindergarten, so it's a robust program. It considers the scheduling needs of families that need full-time preschool, serves children between 3 and 5, but the programs themselves need to provide a little larger range, or should, to provide a continuum of care for the families all the way from more of infant and toddler through that preschool age into grade school. And it serves families with incomes of less than 200,000 or 200% of the federal poverty level. So those are sort of the basic components of the program. Keep in mind that it doesn't mean that this program would have to serve 100% of the kids that are below 200, but the funding that this program provides would have to be directed at those children in terms of subsidies or other mechanisms. So in terms of the Early Learning Council then is given responsibility to sort of put the guidepost on this, including establishing minimum salaries for lead teachers. This is to promote quality. That minimum salary level should be in line with what public kindergarten teachers make in terms of that, and there's also requirements in terms of other quality measures, including including how well skilled the teaching assistants are. Funding for this program will be included in the OD grant and aid budget. Currently it's slated at roughly $27 million, but the agreement is that a third of that money, after we need to take a little bit off for staffing and some beginning studies around there, a third of that money would go for pre-K in the first year, and the remainder would be put in a special purpose appropriation for the second year for the new program that's outlined in the bill. And that is the condensed version of the bill.
Yeah. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As I look at this, please, I would love to be told what I'm misunderstanding here. We just allocated more money for open source than we are this program.
No, Madam, or Mr. Chair.
Help me understand, because I'm looking at numbers and actually getting a little cranky.
What will likely be allocated in the plan as it stands right now between the expansion of pre-K or Oregon pre-K that would get a third of the money, and this program would get the remainder, is $27 million.
But what is the $691,000 again?
Representative Springer, that is what ODE would need in the first biennium of administration of this program. It's assuming, and I think it's like 1.5 staff, I'd have to go back and look at the detail, and then also some beginning studies by a contractor, which I think is likely to be PSU. I'm looking at Mr. Mandel to verify that. And then that would be the spending in the first year of the biennium, and I think the second may be slightly less than that, but I need to show. Yes, the second year would be a little less than $400,000.
For the administration,
but the program funding is $26.5 million.
Yeah.
I know there's other questions, so I'd love to hear those, and maybe they'll bring some comfort.
Rep. Huffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug, down toward the end, you were talking about salaries, pay for teachers or whatever within these early learning programs, and you said something about there would be a requirement that what did you say about the pay and alluding to an increase in their pay?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, the bill on page 2 says that the program that would be eligible for this would be need to provide the lead preschool teacher with a salary that meets the minimum salary requirements established by the council. And then later in the bill, it says the council shall establish minimum compensation for those lead preschool teachers that are comparable, if I think is the word used, as public school kindergarten teachers. So there is an issue around, and I think you raised that during the public hearing in this bill.
And you'll recall when the governor was before us, I asked her about that, about the fact that preschool teachers are paid very poorly, a little bit more than minimum wage usually, and that one of the problems that we find in our community colleges when they're offering degrees in early childhood teaching, that you're offering a degree that they have to work hard to get that's going to lead them to a very poor salary. And so one of the things that's in this bill clearly is that we expect the salaries to be equivalent to a beginning kindergarten teacher's salary, which is a significant, you know, salary. In most instances, it would be in the $40,000 range.
So follow up.
Yeah.
Clarification. So would the, for the lead teacher that's currently making $23,000 a year,
yeah,
would this $27 million go toward helping to make up that salary? Or who's going to make up the salary increase? Is it the parents, which are largely low-income parents that are?
No, it's not the parents. That's what the subsidy is for. But go ahead and introduce yourself and try and answer the question.
Hello, David Mandel, Policy and Research Director at the Early Learning Division. Co-chairs, my understanding is the way that this bill has evolved is, you know, based as you've been discussing, we know that having well-educated, compensated teachers is a really important part of getting the kinds of outcomes that we know associated with preschool. But we also know that there's a huge gap between where we now are in salary levels and that goal. So this bill was amended from its original version. So my understanding of the current version of the bill is it gives the Early Learning Council the responsibility to start developing guidelines on that with a long-term goal of trying to get to parity, but not establishing parity at the outset.
Okay. Rep. Huffman.
So back to the educational component of it, education and salary, if the goal is to get the early learning lead teacher, not all the support staff, but the lead teacher up to parity with the kindergarten teacher, kindergarten teachers, minimum baccalaureate degree with a teaching certificate. Many of them already have come in with
masters
or they're working on them. Does this address the educational requirement for, are they going to have similar degrees and certifications as the kindergarten teacher then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, in the bill it says, and I'll read it just verbatim because it's probably self-explanatory, the program must have providing highly trained lead preschool teachers who have at least a bachelor degree in early childhood learning or education or a related field, and the requirements of this paragraph or subparagraph may be satisfied by a lead preschool teacher who does not have a bachelor's degree but who has submitted a plan to attain a bachelor's degree, or is making progress to getting it.
Follow. Go ahead. So this is for Head Start, OPK, other early learning preschool types of opportunities that will be included in this?
My understanding, Mr. Chair, Representative Hoffman, it would only be to those programs who receive these grants or funding through this program that applies to. So if I'm not sure exactly what the requirements are for a Head Start teacher, but that would be outside the realm of this program unless that program receives some kind of funding through this program.
I guess I've got Mitchell kind of as my poster in my brain here, and I want to make sure that I mean, because we have a problem out in Mitchell getting even the minimal certification for staff, and you know, I'm supportive of the concept, and I agree, you know, we've talked about pay and whatnot all session, but I'm just concerned that we're not going to do something to a program out there that in the rural areas that are going to struggle. They're not going to be able to access additional monies, which could help the program, and at the same, so it's kind of like this could work against them where they need the money but they can't access it because they don't have that teacher with a baccalaureate degree and a teaching certificate. And anyway, I
can I comment, Mr.
Yes,
Co-Chair?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
I think the important phrase there in the bill is a plan to reach that, because we're well aware of the fact that this is brand new, and anything that is new is going to take usually a minimum of 2 to 3 years to implement. And so I believe the intent of this is to give people that time to adjust to these requirements and, like I say, have a plan. And the other reality is we as a body and the governor and all of us have said we need to raise the bar. We want to have our children ready, and I would hope that teacher in Mitchell looks at some course requirements this summer, whether they take them online or in the classroom, and say, okay, and learn some strategies to reach these children to ensure that, I mean, we are. This is a big investment. It's $27 million. And as Representative Springer has shared, Mr. Co-Chair and I, too, have seen a number of items that we're not funding in order to really invest in early education.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. Doug, I just have a couple questions. One is, how much are the relief nurseries getting, approximately?
Under the current plan, which is not finalized yet until I bring it to subcommittee hopefully tomorrow, relief nurseries are getting what they have for current service level. They're getting roughly $320,000 of backfill money plus a $500,000 investment, bringing, I believe, the total amount of state funding. They also receive federal funding of, I believe, 7.6. I'm working off the top of my head. So it is
$760,000.
7.6 million.
Okay, good.
Total.
And then second question I have is regarding the Head Start. So there was a goal, I understand, for how many we were going to enroll more students come this fall, which I'm very supportive of. But how many more students with this plan, did we meet that goal? How many more are going to be able to enroll come fall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. Yeah. I will get them to you on that.
But did we meet the goal?
I'm not sure what the goal was.
Right.
I would have to get back to you on that, and maybe Mr. Mandel knows. I don't know.
I don't have those numbers in front of me, but Co-Chairs, if okay, I just want to also speak to a moment for the pathways around professional development, because I think that's a really important discussion. And you know, I think one of the things that we realized is that there's serious barriers or time, location, and resources around professional development, particularly for people who are working full time in early care and education programs in preschool. So there is a significant work that's sort of being done parallel to this around deepening and expanding those opportunities, and that's also referenced in the bill as something for the Early Learning Council to focus on. So I think one of the reasons why the language was changed to BA or pathway was an acknowledgement that that's really a work in progress. So I think it's like the salary parity of both recognizing the importance of that for the outcomes, but also recognizing that there's work to be done and pathways to be built to get there, but the importance of making sure that we are moving towards building towards those goals.
Thank you, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I'm concerned I wasn't very clear earlier, so I just I want to restate a couple things. I in no way, shape, or form question the validity of pre-K and Head Start, and funding those slots is a priority. I'm talking about the administrative costs on the other end that are concerning, but we've talked a lot, and I support the premise that we would increase those slots for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd love to see money go for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Additional discussion? Thank you very much. Madam Co-Chair, on 3380.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 3380 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Representative Thompson. Senator Thompson.
I like the basic premise of the bill. I have a little bit of problem with us, or I have a lot of problem with us setting salaries and stuff for folks. That's what this part of this is going to lead to. I think it's going to a lot of the Eastern Oregon rural areas aren't going to be able to do this program, so they won't get the grant. So I'm going to be a courtesy no.
Okay. Additional. Objections to the motion. Senator Thompson objects. Any other objections? Motion's adopted. Carriers, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay, this is House Bill. Representative Huffman, did you want to take this to full or do you want me to?
Could you?
I'd be happy to take it to full. And
I'll carry on the floor.
Yeah, Representative Taylor carried it on the floor.
Okay, and I'll take it to the Senate. And that leads close the work session on 3380, open a work session on Senate Bill 439, Outdoor School.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the Outdoor School Bill. It establishes the outdoor education account in the state treasury for the purpose of funding a six-day residential hands-on outdoor school program or equivalent for fifth and sixth grade students across the state. We have the LFO recommended A4 amendment, which removes the appropriation clause and also includes language that relieves Oregon State University Extension Service from any duties or obligations unless funding is provided for expenses incurred. So there is no funding in the bill. It will just establish the framework for the outdoor school program.
And my understanding is that even though there's no funding and that troubles me a lot, I wish we were fully funding this, but that this passing this bill will enable them to attract some federal money.
Grants.
Is that correct?
I don't have confirmation of that.
No.
That's what I've been told. Yeah. Senator Roblin?
I don't know that we know that we're going to get any of that money. My assumption is we're going to have to keep fighting for this. This is a bill Sherry and I were co-sponsors on, and we heard amazing testimony in the Senate from students who have partaken of it, and at least one of my school districts continues to do it because they found that it was directorate, their highest, some of the highest graduation rates in the state at Tillamook County, and maybe the best graduation rates of non-English speakers in the state. Also, they were directly related to their investment in outdoor school. It gave kids an opportunity to understand why they're learning things, and it gave them an opportunity to get hands-on and not sit in the classroom, and it is an amazing thing. $44 million is a little bit of money, and we know that. Going in, we we had some lobby people who were very diligent in trying to find any source we could possibly take with the smallest relationship to the world, and we went through all of them, and most of the people came out against us repeatedly, but that didn't keep them from continuing, and I appreciate that effort. We need to figure out at some point if we want to improve, I think, performance of kids, if you can't make direct connections to the real world and show them why this is important. And I am really excited about the fact that we're putting it in statute so that we actually do know that we have a place. Extension was more than happy to work with us, and they are the perfect place to have that connection that goes back. They've got trust amongst most people in the rural and other places. I mean, I don't know why it wasn't thought of before, and I commend the people who came to us with, and were lobbying on this particular issue. Getting it in statute means now all I have to do, I don't have to fight about getting it into statute, I just have to fight about getting some money. And I'm willing to do that to get this. So I'm really pleased that we're having this bill up today. I hope that as time goes on, people will start to understand how really important it is. And this is one that's really an urban and rural combined, because the urban kids need this as badly as any rural kid needs it, and sometimes even more. And that was one of the young people that spoke, was this young man who was... He just talked about, he didn't like school. I was doing okay. I went, and then he went to outdoor school, and his whole world changed. I mean, he came back as a student who wanted to learn because there was a reason. And we miss that in schools a lot these days. And I would take 6 days of this instead of 6 days of testing any day. for me, that's half the money right there. The money we spend on tests, we get half of it here. So I'm just saying, I think these are the kinds of programs that open kids' minds and eyes and brain to what learning is really all about. So hopefully we get this in the statute as a policy, and then we move forward as time goes on.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I love Senator Roblin's words, so I'm going to sound boring and practical. And I agree with every word that you just spoke. I want to add a couple things. First of all, having it in statute, I think, brings a level of credibility to this program that it deserves but has not yet, I think, achieved as far as perception. Putting in statute the six-day residential, I think, is significant because schools are choosing maybe to do 3 days because that's how much money they have.
Yeah.
And I think you water down the program.
Yeah.
And I think you impact the efficacy of the program. And my concern in that is, and I'm not advocating against 3 days, I'm advocating for 6 days.
Yeah.
Reason being is, well, it was 3 days, we didn't get a whole lot for our money, and you probably don't. Yeah. None of us go to Hawaii for 3 days. We go for a week because we want the full impact. I've never been to Hawaii now that I think about it. Not on my list. So I think that having the standards in statute are extremely important. I think partnering with Extension is key, not just because I love Extension and they're great, but we're talking about a program that, we've talked about CTE a ton in this building this session. And I could argue, I think I could make a strong argument that we're talking about CTE here because we're opening the eyes of many students to other vocational opportunities that they wouldn't see or have the exposure to otherwise. And so I think that is significant. Certainly in our agriculture and timber natural resources economy for jobs. The other piece that I would just throw in
to illustrate the value of this program. Everybody knows that there's one school in the state that's particularly near and dear to my heart, and that when our kids go into that school, it's a K-8, when they go in at kindergarten, they hear about the camp out or something like that. By first grade, they understand they're going to outdoor school.
Yeah.
And they start their fundraising, parents do, about third grade.
Yeah.
And we do the full week program, and we foot the bill.
Yeah.
Because of the value.
Yeah.
We foot the entire bill. And it takes multiple years to raise that money. It's not so you can get a week out of school. It's so the value we see in our kids that go to that, that they realize. And so I think we're not talking about a cool camp out for our kids for a week and a vacation. We're talking about economic development. We're talking about CTE. And we're talking about practical learning applications, which all of us talk about, and I think that this is a great way to do that. I wish there was some funding attached, but we're going to get there because we're not done with the conversation.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Roblin may want to address this, but when we had the dinner back in January and the Campbell twins took us out and froze us to have dinner one. No, I'm just kidding.
It was cold.
But we had the dinner, and Representative Bentz spoke up with concern about curriculum. And I noticed the vote count in the Senate coming out of the committee looked like it was party line, and I'm thinking that maybe there was some concern about curriculum. So I wanted to point that out and see if you could address that. But two things. Number one is I had a number of my school districts reach out and say, please support outdoor school. They love it, and I've been on board from day one. Number two, I want to point out that in relationship to the curriculum, I think there is a misunderstanding, and it can vary district to district, but it's not intended to be an environmental program. It's intended to be an outdoor nature program and learning and gaining an understanding, but not specifically to be an environmental full-blown green program. So I wanted to get that on the record.
Okay, Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. I just wanted to, everyone's pretty much said everything I wanted to say, but I'm such a huge supporter of the outdoor school. I've just been convinced of the merits to it, and I just wanted to say going forward, I'd be more than happy to help work towards finding support for it. It's very concerning to me, the inconsistency in which it's offered throughout the state, and I personally found it very frustrating where I wanted to basically make a contribution at my child's school in Portland and to pay for other students to go. And I was told I couldn't do that because there was no mechanism in which to do that. And I thought that that was kind of a interesting thing. And then you have, you know, some school districts that are making it happen for a full week. And in our school district, it's for 3 days. And it just seems that we should be, you know, moving towards or creating a way so that for all school districts, if nothing else, they can accept donations, so that we can, you know, hopefully get it back to the full week that, or the 6 days that it was. But so that's all. Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, and to address the issue, and I think you're right, I think there are a lot of people. Our district lost outdoor school. Our ESD actually had an outdoor education coordinator for a long time. And they lost it because that person became so engaged in the environmentalist movement that the program changed, and there wasn't a fair appraisal of the whole thing. And some of that lingers, because that happened in the 60s and 70s and early 80s, when a lot of that stuff really moved towards the others. That's why I stated in the early one that I think having the extension as the place that houses it is singularly important, because they take a very rational and open approach to what it means, an outdoor school. And they understand that this is about teaching kids about the environment and how it can be used in productive ways through logging, whatever, and how it can be used for recreation. I mean, it is, that's why the 6 days is important. They cover all of that. And kids and their families take away from it different things. Some will come back and say, I want to be an environmentalist. Others will come back and say, I want to work the rest of my life out there in natural resources. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. And I'm willing to go get the education that will get me that kind of a job. And it could be working for a logging company. It could be working for an agency. It could be working whatever. But the Campbells and others, I think, have helped us put that in perspective. And I think the dinner was to show that there's a lot to this stuff. And it takes the whole plan, and it really isn't about an environmentalist agenda or this agenda. It's keeping it in the middle. It's an agenda about who Oregon is, what Oregon is, and all the opportunities you can use for it. And that's why putting this in place with the extensions, understanding that we're not going to require them to do it even if we don't give them any money. And that was important. But that's where it should be housed, because they have the people who can really give the perspective and help train the people who are going to do this in all aspects of natural resources. So I'm sure that's exactly why we had some of the mixed vote, because they're not quite sure yet. And I think we've got to be very careful if we implement this program that we do it in a very even-handed, across-the-board way. And I am committed to that, because I think kids need to understand there's really great opportunities out there at all aspects.
I've been committed to outdoor schools since I was a young state representative in the 70s, and my father was the resident botanist at Camp Colton after retiring as a college professor. My father was a renowned botanist. He knew more about native plants and animals than anybody in existence, and I remember one lesson that he taught. He would ask his students, and by the way, outdoor school is not just for sixth graders. The adolescents, the high school kids that serve as junior counselors, get an awful lot out of it as well. I remember the one lesson that my father taught. He would ask his students, standing before a big full-grown Douglas fir tree, what made that tree? How did it grow? What caused it to grow? And they'd say, well, it gets nutrients out of the ground. And my father would say, well, it gets a little bit of minerals and water out of the ground, but that's not where it gets its life. And finally, he would hold up a tiny little Douglas fir needle. And he would say, that is what grew this tree through photosynthesis. And he'd give him a lesson on photosynthesis. And it was just remarkable. And they still have a memorial to my father out at Camp Colton because of his work there for many years before he was tragically killed in a fishing accident. This is a great program. We need to pass this bill today on to the full Ways and Means Committee, and then we need to work with advocates and find funding so that every sixth grader in this state gets a full week in outdoor school. And Madam Co-Chair, I would ask for a motion on the A4 amendment, please.
Yes, I move the dash A4 amendment to Senate Bill 439.
Discussion, any objections?
Hi, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I was just gonna comment that I felt that Craig Campbell was very weak this session in not getting the funding. I just want to say, but he did benefit.
I'll
because
second that motion.
Karina and I went to outdoor school, picked huckleberries, and made a pie and took it by the office. So he was able to see the full expression of being outdoors and making a product and then enjoying it.
He'll probably work harder next time.
Yeah, huckleberry pie is my favorite. On my birthday every year, my wife bakes a huckleberry pie.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes. I move Senate Bill 439 to the full committee with a do pass recommendation as amended with huckleberry pie.
Discussion? Any objections? Okay. Madam Co-Chair, I would be happy to carry this to the Senate and to the full Ways and Means Committee.
And Representative Springer.
Representative Springer to the House.
Thank you.
Now, okay. Krista and Senator Roblin.
Yeah, it wasn't apropos necessarily to that, but I'm hoping that in December of this year, Mr. Campbell will get some new tools in his toolbox about how to move forward, because our next Star Wars movie is coming out, and I know he will be there, so I'm sure he will learn and have some more ability to work with us to get this done.
Anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn, Madam Co-Chair?
Just to remind the committee that tomorrow, before we start hearing bills, Mr. Wilson will be going through a form that has line items for the programs. Or, well, let's put it this way. If we're doing the ODE budget, you need to be able to understand what's in there. And so Doug will certainly be ready to ensure that we all know what we're voting on.
It's complex, and but overall, it's the best education budget we've had in several years. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Unfortunately, as you should have received notice in your emails, I will not be here tomorrow. Darn, I hated seeing that bill scheduled it for tomorrow. Just wanted to pass that on.
Okay, thank you.
But you'll be here in spirit.
Sure.
Spirit vote.
Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, any thoughts beyond tomorrow? Are we looking at tomorrow being it, or maybe?
No, I think we'll be here Thursday.
Okay. Yeah.
There's just not enough time tomorrow to finish all the work we have to do. I believe Thursday will be our last meeting of this subcommittee. And then Madam Co-Chair and I are planning a little get-together for sometime next week. We haven't selected exactly a day. It won't be Monday. But what we'll try to do is
Monday afternoon.
No. We want to have a little party, probably at 9 o'clock, one of the days that we would ordinarily meet in the conference room here on the House side.
Mr. Co-Chair, aren't you in bed by 9?
9
a.m. Oh, you didn't say
a.m.
Oh.
And yes, often I am in bed by 9. Senator Roblin.
I just want to think, since you brought up spirit, and I have a tribe that has a little area not far from here that has a mountain in the spirit. But, and they have a bunch of their student leaders in the building today. So they'll be visiting and being a part of the activities today, because they think it's important for their young leaders to get an understanding of the law process. So if you see some of our native kids from the Grand Ronde tribe wandering around today, greet them and enjoy it. And you'll hear about it on the floor of the Senate.
Spirit Mountain Casino.
Oh, that's a good place, too. Anybody wants to visit, it's in my district.
Hey,
it's a great thing. So.
We took their land. They take our money.
So thank you very much.
Gotta go.
Thank you very much for being
here. For adjourn.
I hope they take our money. I am all for that. I hope they take our money. I am all for that.